Good morning. We are on the second half of the first chapter called Invisible Selfhood in the book Spiritual Power of Truth. We ended last week with the veil is dropped from God. And your eyes see God face to face. You can give up all praying to God to do something for dear Mrs. Jones or her child, and rejoice that you have discovered God omnipresence. Do you see now the greater value of the word omnipresence? Is there anything omnipresent other than I? I here, I there. I here and I there. I with the living. I with the dead. I with the yet unborn. No one will enter the kingdom of heaven separate and apart from I. So you should know, if you have the conscious awareness of I, you can enter. If you don't, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. As you take that word sacredly and secretly into your consciousness, you will discover that there is a good reason for Scripture saying, "Be still and know that I am God." Then let God be omnipresence and omniscience and omnipotence. You will know why it says that I will never leave you. You will not be looking around for a man of 2,000 years ago. You will understand that the man of 2,000 years ago unveiled the truth for you, so that you would know that I in the midst of you am He. And that I in the midst of you is your bread, your meat, your wine, your water, your resurrection. That I is in the midst of you, that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. Therefore, you rest and you relax in that I. There remaineth a rest. No concept of God that you can hold up in your mind can fulfill your prayers. A concept is an image, a graven image, which you have made. What difference does it make whether you use the word God, G-O-D, or whether you decide to turn it into mind, M-I-N-D, or life, L-I-F-E, or soul, S-O-U-L? Are these not words in your mind? Over and over this has been made clear in this message, and this is the most difficult part of the entire Infinite Way message. Until you can overcome all the concepts of God you have ever had and wash them right out of your mind, taking them up one by one, whether they happen to be love or life or soul or spirit, until there is not a single word left that you can think of, you will not reach the place where you will experience God. Because God is not a word. God is an experience. So, you cannot have the God experience until you have washed, one by one, all concepts out of your mind. And this is the most difficult part of the infinite way. Just so you know, there is work for you to do. Once you have eliminated all that and have come to the realization that none of this is God, for only I in the midst of me is God, then you face probably the last hurdle. Because the word I is no more God than the word God is God. So you wash everything out of your consciousness except for the word I, which you live with, you take within, sacredly, secretly. And then you wash that out too. Then you are ready for the God experience. However, this is an easy hurdle to overcome because I is myself. And one thing you will agree with is that none of us know ourselves. Of that we can all be assured. Whatever I think I am is only a mental concept of me, and a very biased one. I know that because I know that what I think of different people is not the way they are, because I have heard other people speak of those same persons, and it did not sound like the people I was thinking of. So I know that the last hurdle is the easiest one. That which you know as yourself cannot be God. So there is no danger that you will form an I am movement and say, I am God. You will not do that. No I am movements. You will know that when you speak the word I, you are speaking the most sacred and secret word that was ever given to man. It is one so holy that Moses realized that the people of his day would definitely misinterpret it. Therefore, he put the veil back on. The human being is not God. The human being is the man Paul spoke about, who is not even under the law of God. That man must die, and that man does die, in the moment that you realize I in the midst of me. Now, when you have a realization, when you have the realization of I in the midst of me, the conscious awareness, that's not a concept. That's consciousness. But when you cling to I in your mind, and perhaps you repeat it to yourself, that's a concept. And so we have to wash that concept out as the last hurdle to overcome. Then we can sit back and rest and relax in I in the midst of me and come into the conscious awareness of the living I. Then you realize that something greater than yourself is performing this good in you and through you. Now here is where personal selfhood dies. First, as you commence to realize that the negative qualities that go to make up your humanhood, impatience, intolerance, bias, bigotry, prejudice, are not really you and are not even welcomed by you, so that your humanhood begins to die. What are they? Impersonal world thought. Thoughts about a world. Thoughts about a human self. Thoughts about concepts. Concepts about concepts. Without power. Without law. Without God. Without I. Joel calls them nothingness. Then, later, as you begin to realize that whatever of good qualities are flowing through you, these also are not so much you as the real divine of you, showing through. Then you have come to that place where you realize that neither the good nor the evil of human experience is me. All that is me is that which God is expressing as me, or through me, or in me. Then we have impersonalized the self. Then that selfhood dies. Remember, we have already impersonalized God by realizing God is the I of you and of me. God is the selfhood of you and of me. Now we have come down to the actual experience of acknowledging that whatever there is of life or truth, of love, that is flowing through me, is really the divine expressing itself. In impersonalizing God, we realize God constitutes our being. Just think how differently we view each other the moment we stop seeing each other as male or female, good or bad, and begin to impersonalize and witness the divinity, that I. You cannot do it, of course, while mistaking the body for the person. You do it only as your attention is directed through the I, and you realize that this individual is hidden and invisible, incorporeal, the spiritual I. I do not care what the human appearance is. I have seen it in prisons. I have seen it in hospitals. But it is still I back there. And all the rest of this is a masquerade. The truth, then, the unveiled truth, is that God is incorporeal, the spiritual I, in the midst of me and in the midst of you. This is unveiled truth. God is incorporeal, the spiritual I, the I of every individual, the I, really, of the animal world and the vegetable world and the mineral world, the consciousness. This is spiritual enlightenment. This is spiritual illumination. And so your conscious awareness of the indwelling I in all that is, that's spiritual illumination. Put the veil back on. Then God is God, or God is life. Or God is Jesus. Now, you have the veil back on. The moment you have personalized God or localized God, you have put the veil back on. And you have taken yourself outside the government of God. So when you personalize God, you take yourself outside the government of God. Isn't that interesting? So you are what Paul said is not under the law of God, neither indeed can be, if you personalize God. You are only under the government of God when you relax in the realization, thank you, Father. The kingdom of God is within me, and I is its name. Relax and let this I function. You do not function it. You do not direct it. You do not wield it as a power. You relax and God functions. The I functions as your meat, your bread, your wine, and your water. The I functions that you might have life and have it abundantly. By this time you have become a listening ear. Your whole life is now lived as if all you were was a listening ear. Because in that attitude and altitude of consciousness, this I lives in you, through you. This I lives as you. Or as Paul said, I live yet not I. Christ liveth my life. Or as Jesus said, not I, the Father within. However, remember, the Father is I. So, this is the infinite way. This is the way we are to live. Resting, relaxing, letting the I function. And then the I, way down here in the midst of me, I lives as me. And there's no me, there's only I functioning. My Father and your Father is the infinite I that I am. That you are. That I in the midst of you, which, if you relax in it, will live through you, will live your life for you, generously, abundantly, lovingly, spiritually. Once you know this truth, you can no longer take thought for your life, for what ye shall eat, or for what you shall drink, or wherewithal you shall be clothed. You are then taking away any of the prerogative of God, the I in the midst of you, that has come that you might have all this, if you take thought for your life. So, if you take thought for your life, you're stepping into the driver's seat. You do not live now by thought or by taking thought. You do not live by bread alone. You live by every word that emanates from that I within you, to which you have now become attuned. So you become a listening ear, but it's not listening out here, and it's not with these physical ears. It's listening within. It's an intuitive listening. It's more of a feeling, a sensing, than a listening. And you will receive impartations from within. from that still small voice, you will receive truth unveiled. As you become this listening ear, that still small voice takes over. Remember, God is not in the whirlwind. God is not in your problems. God is in the still small voice that emanates from the I within you. We, as Joel, Bill, or Mary, are a state of attentiveness, listening, alert always to the impartation that is to come from within. Listen to this from Joel's book, The Mystical Eye, the chapter, The Unveiling. What is truth? What is the veil placed on truth that acts to hold us in bondage to ignorance and fear? What is truth? If you study the religions of the world, and if you go back carefully to the original revelators of each teaching, you will discover that there is only one truth, and that each one of these revelators received and taught the same truth, whether it is the teaching of Krishna, Buddha, of Shankara, Moses, or of Jesus. You will discover that it was always the same truth. It has never deviated. Then, if you go further in your study of why and how these revelations were veiled, and what manner of veil was put on them, you will discover that it was the same veil, that the same method was used in each case to hide the truth. Every time truth has been revealed, those to whom it was revealed have identified the truth with the name of the revelator and worshipped him, Krishna, Jesus, Moses, yeah. The revelator never did this, because anyone who is high enough in consciousness to receive such a revelation would never personalize it. Yes, no I am movements. In fact, no person could be an open channel to receive such a revelation if he were even tempted to use it for personal gain or aggrandizement. But there are always there are others possibly who, either through ignorance or evil intent, decide to build a statue to Moses, Elijah, or Jesus, or some other revelator, and then the veil is on again. Yes, and there are people in California that are calling Joel a master. How long will it be before they make little statues of Joel that we can put on our dashboard as we're driving along and feel like we're protected? The same thing is repeated over and over again. So, Jesus removed the veil, and he did it so that the truth would be perfectly clear throughout all ages. Yes, my words shall not pass away. On the one hand, he said, I can of my own self do nothing, If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. My doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. All this he said, so that for all time men might see, and seeing understand, that his human identity was the same as yours and mine. But he also said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He that seeth me seeth him that sent me. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the resurrection and the life. To the unillumined, those two sets of statements seem irreconcilable. But there is a way to interpret them so that they are no longer contradictory. For example, if I say that I am a man of flesh and blood, just as you are, that I have my human failings and human virtues, even as you have, this is undoubtedly true of the man Joel. And yet, at the same time, the spiritual identity of Joel is God, just as the eye of every man is God. Because of that, you may receive healings through a person who knows that truth. You may be reformed. You may overcome false appetites. You may have your business made better. You may have your family life made happier. Because I in the midst of him is God. If you turn to the Christ, the I at the center of any illumined person will give you water, and you will never thirst again. I will give you food, meat, water, bread, and you will never hunger again. The final revelation that must forever remove the veil and show you the real truth in the Master's statement, call no man your father upon the earth. When I unveil the truth of the eye of your being as God, the Son of God, and Christ as the mediator, the individualization, the connecting link between I the Father and I the Son, I am revealing the truth that sets you free. Should some students in the future claim that Joel is a master, you will recognize what they are doing. They are putting the veil back on the truth. Somebody either wants to get rich or powerful, or somebody is very stupid. Some have put the veil back on the truth through stupidity, through ignorance of the meaning of the word I, and through personalizing it. All right, so something's wrong with the Infinite Way office, because by calling Joel a master of this and that, the master, they're putting the veil on. If he's the master, where are you? I have a little pet peeve with this, and so I'm sorry. The only master is I in the midst of you. That's the only master ever. Buddhas say that if you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. That means if you see the Buddha and you're calling him the master or someone else's, strike that from your mind. Just get rid of that concept. Take out the trash. The only master is I. in the midst of you. So again, relax. Let this I function. As you become the listening ear, that still small voice takes over. Remember, God is not in your problems. God is in the still small voice that emanates from the I within you. You are never to say, I am God. You are never even to think, I am God. For this would almost be like trying to spiritualize your humanhood. However, you are to be alert to hear that still small voice utter itself and say to you, be still and know that I, down here in the midst of you, am God. Watch that you do not allow that word I to be another word, another concept up in your mind. This becomes another image and thought, another concept of God, and it can do nothing for you. Now, when you know that you are speaking about selfhood, capital S, when you know you're speaking about being, then, of course, you cannot make mental images. You cannot make mental images of self, of being, of I. Well, they warned us not to make images, graven images of God. And so we didn't. Well, not true. We did. We started making graven images of Jesus and calling that God. Sometimes even going into a church and praying to that graven image. But most of us know, no, that's not God. Years and years ago, I think I was 5 or 6, and my mother sent me to vacation Bible school. And even then I was searching, because I asked the fellow that was in front of the classroom, I said, what is God? Or where is God? One of the two. He pointed to a picture of Jesus and he said, that's God. And I looked at that picture. Someone called for a recess. Everybody went outside, and still I sat there looking at that picture. And my little mind, my little brain said, that's not God. And then I went outside and played with everybody else. So I knew, probably from a previous lifetime, that that's not God. But of course I couldn't tell anybody. But that's not the graven image now that we're talking about. We're talking about the graven image in our mind. And I can see where that happens. Let's say that you sit down to have a meditation and you feel a light touch of the presence on the side of your face, or on your shoulder, or on your arm. You see that, you experience that as a touch of the presence. Now you have built a concept in your mind. That touch of the presence is God. Next time you sit down to meditate, you wait for that touch of the presence and it doesn't come. Because that's not God. God is infinite. If you've ever gazed at a photograph of stars up in the sky at night, you can see that galaxies are infinite. In each galaxy, there are planets. On some planets, there is life. Maybe not human, but life. Each expression of life has cells. Each cells have molecules. Each molecules have atoms. Each atom has neurons, protons. All of that infinity and beyond is God. Now, if you've ever watched, well, if you've ever been to Disney World and you've been on the ride that tries to imitate the explosion of the first bang, the Big Bang, you can experience that and be awed by it, and then know that God is infinite power. And so you can't conceive God in your mind. Anything you have in the mind is a mental image, a graven image. And if you cling to it, you cannot experience other aspects of God, because you're still waiting for God to fill this funnel you have. So release all that. Release it. As he says, wash it out of your mind. Take them up one by one and drop them. So watch that you do not allow that word I to be another word up in your mind. This becomes another image and thought, another concept of God, and it can do nothing for you. Now, when you know that, you are speaking about selfhood, being, then of course you cannot make mental images. You cannot make mental images of self, of being, of I. However, when they warned us of graven images, we thought that if we did not make statues externally, we could make a statue internally. But this we must not do. Now, having impersonalized God and having realized why God is omnipresence, because I am here, and the place whereon I stand is holy ground, we must take the second step. All of that was the first step. While it is revealed in a few tiny places in the Master's teaching, it is not explained. And it is, of course, put up thy sword. Thou, Pilate, couldst have no power over me. What did hinder you? Pick up your bed and walk. This, in other words, is the non-power of the appearance of evil, impersonalizing every appearance of evil. So you impersonalize God and you impersonalize evil. Where is the person? If all evil is impersonal without a person, if all good is impersonal without a person, where is the person? There is none. The person is a series of concepts. This is difficult because we have a guilt complex about our own lacks and limitations. We have the feeling we should know better, and we should be doing better, and therefore we tend to personalize evil in our own experience and think, I am at fault. The only thing that can save us from that, again, is the word I. The moment we realize the meaning of the word I, we will see that it is impossible that I am responsible, and so we can impersonalize evil. We must be watchful that we do not personalize evil in our fellow man. Yes, you can't look out there and say, she's a far left radical whatever. And you cannot look out there and say, he's an extremist. That's personalizing. Oh, you can do it. You're perfectly free. What does that do? He told us. It takes you outside the government of God. So if you want to live outside the government of God, well, have at it. The moment we realize the meaning of the word I, we will see it's impossible that I am responsible, and we can impersonalize evil. We must be watchful that we do not personalize evil in our fellow man. It is in the impersonalizing of evil that healing work is brought about. It is not nearly as fruitful in the impersonalizing of God as in the impersonalizing of evil. So, he has said this before. Healing work, if you just impersonalize God, you only are on the fringes. But if you impersonalize evil, then you have healing. And sometimes quite miraculous. In other words, in the present state of our consciousness, when we can impersonalize evil, we do better healing work than if we merely impersonalize God. All of our attention for centuries has been trying to get God to come into our experience to destroy evil. This is a difficult habit of thought to break. This desiring of God to protect us from evil or to take evil out of our lives. Evil is, in and of itself, neither a presence nor a power. Evil is nothing that God contends with. It is nothing that God overcomes or destroys. The way we know this, beyond all doubt, is that as we come into this higher consciousness, this impersonalization of God, even for a momentary flash, all of the so-called evils begin to disappear. And later we realize that they never existed as entities or identities. Now, have this reminder from the original Infinite Way book in the first chapter, Putting on Immortality. Joel says, all the error that has existed down through the ages is founded on the theory or belief of two worlds. One, the heavenly kingdom or spiritual life, and the other, a material world or human existence, each separate from the other. Men have always attempted to bring harmony into the discords of human existence through an attempt by prayer to contact this other world or spiritual realm, and to bring spirit or God to act upon the so-called material existence. Let us, however, begin with the understanding that our world is not an erroneous one, but rather that the universe in which we live is the realm of reality about which man entertains false concepts. And so the work of bringing health and harmony into our experience is not then getting rid of or changing a mortal material universe. No, the work is correcting the finite concept of our existence. And of course we do that through inner realization. And so he says, evil in and of itself is neither a presence nor a power. The way we know this, beyond all doubt, is that as we come into this higher consciousness, this impersonalization of God, even for a momentary flash, all of the so-called evils begin to disappear, and later we realize that they never existed as entities or identities. We realized the evil was really our concept of them, or the world's concept, and they were not evil people. The evil was not overcome. It was not there. So there are three things that we must learn to do. Impersonalize God, and don't put the veil on. Impersonalize self, and realize only I is here. And impersonalize appearances, and know that they are not presence nor power. All right, let us be still for a moment and see if we have anything else to add. This is a pretty deep chapter. It gives you a lot of work to do within yourself. It gives you the true name of God. It gives you the instructions to clean out your house, empty out these concepts. It tells you to work with I in the midst of me, to take that word I sacredly, secretly within yourself. And then it tells you, when you come into the realization of I, the conscious awareness of the presence of I, you feel it, then clean out that final word, the word I, out of your mind. You're floating on nothingness. He hangeth the earth upon nothing. And you are floating on nothing, and yet this inner I comes to the surface and begins to function you. And you rest in it, and you relax in it. And behold, I make all things new. Your entire experience will be made new. Your entire self will be made new. Your entire being will be made new. Your entire consciousness will be made new. And so, you will be transformed by the renewing of your mind when you become conceptless and you become that listening ear, listening down deep within you for that inner voice. Speak. I listen. And then I functions you. Christ lives. God lives. The Father within lives. Where you appear to be. And when you are in the conscious awareness of the living I, of the living I, people who touch the edge of your consciousness, the hem of your robe, are healed. Sometimes they don't know why, because they didn't ask for it. But as they enter your consciousness, and you recognize the I, they are blessed. And so you become a blessing. Your very presence is a blessing. No longer judging, no longer forming concepts, no longer criticizing. You become a blessing. I am come that they might have life, and life more abundantly. Row upon row upon row. And so this chapter is very deep. There is a lot of work to do here. You can't do it in a week. We should probably take 5 years off and come back here and see if you've done it yet. Can't do it in a week, but you can make a beginning. Don't put the veil on. Don't be tempted to put the veil on. When you see people praying before a statue of Jesus or a statue of Krishna or a statue of Buddha, recognize that's a veil. I know who I am. And rest and let I function. Thank you once again for drawing this out. I didn't think I had enough to go for an hour, and I guess I was right because it's only 55 minutes, but it feels like it's all been said. So thank you for drawing it out, and many blessings as you walk this path. And may you experience the beauty, the joy, the love, the fulfillment of the inner hidden splendor. Thank you.